United States. Ballpark economics. Fields of dreams. Why politicians can't resist wasting money on sports stadiums.
On a summer evening in Kansas City, Kauffman Stadium is a fine place to be. A good game and $1 hot dogs await the 15,000 fans there to see the city's Major League Baseball team, the Royals. Before play begins, some mill about in the parking lot, drinking tall boys from the back of trucks. But amid the bonhomie is an undercurrent of worry. In April, nearly 60% of local residents rejected a sales tax that would have helped pay for a new ballpark. Now there's a chance that the Royals might pick up their bats and go elsewhere. If it stopped them from leaving, I'd take the tax, says Daniel Kapp, a lifelong fan. The devotees' worry, the loss of a beloved team, is easy to understand. From a national perspective, the worry is different. Whether the Royals end up staying in Missouri or moving, one outcome seems all but assured. Taxpayers somewhere will end up footing much of the bill for their new stadium. Virtually every new professional sports venue in America is built with public funds, and the subsidies are only growing, even as evidence piles up that they're almost always lousy investments. Stadium construction tends to come in waves. Most venues are used for about 30 years before their owners look for new digs. With many facilities now at that age, professional sports teams across America are getting restless. In baseball, Tampa Bay is building a new stadium, Cleveland is undertaking renovations, and Oakland is hoping to move to Las Vegas. In American football, Buffalo and Nashville are in the throes of giant construction projects. In basketball, Los Angeles is building a glitzy new arena, and Philadelphia and Oklahoma City hope to follow. The list goes on. About 40 facilities may end up being replaced in this decade, according to a paper by John Charles Bradbury of Kennesaw State University and his colleagues. They estimate that the cost to the public could reach $20 billion. In the 1960s and 1970s, cities regularly stumped up 100% of the money for new stadiums. As it became clear that uber-rich owners captured many of the profits from the sports played there, officials started to demand that they should pay for more of the building. Public funding now covers about 40% of costs. But because stadiums have become more lavish, the absolute level of public spending has risen in real terms to roughly triple what it was three decades ago. The economic case for stadiums rests on three pillars. They create thousands of jobs, they unleash a steady stream of consumption, and they serve as anchors for thriving neighbourhoods. But a half century of evidence suggests that the three pillars are actually rather wobbly. Most of the stadium-related jobs come during construction. The permanent jobs, such as maintenance and ticket sales, may number only in the hundreds. The consumption boost is largely illusory. If people weren't shelling out to go to a game, they'd be spending on other forms of entertainment. As for community development, there have been enough instances of teams switching cities for serious before and after studies. In a review in 2015, Dennis Coates of the University of Maryland concluded that the relationship between teams and local employment and income levels was insignificant, sometimes even negative. The dearth of economic benefits is not hard to explain. Activity in and around stadiums is sporadic. A football stadium hosts about 10 games a year. An arena that is home to both hockey and basketball teams gets about 90. Even with concerts, they may be empty for about three quarters of the time. And when governments pump money into them, they do so at a high opportunity cost. Investments in schools and public transport would almost always generate greater returns. Does the no vote in Kansas City suggest that people are getting tired of stadium subsidies? Probably not. Some disliked the plan to build a new stadium in a district of old warehouses converted into art galleries and hip restaurants. There was an immediate backlash from the businesses that had built their brands and their clientele here, says Kate Blackman, a manager at The Pairing, a wine store in the area. Others were upset that, along with a new home for the Royals, The money would have gone to renovations of the stadium used by the Chiefs, the city's football team, including sprucing up VIP suites. Voters were receptive to a populist message that people who have a lot should not be taking from people who have little, says Tim Smith, the leader of the No campaign. State lawmakers in Kansas are now trying to concoct a funding plan to lure the Royals and the Chiefs to their side of the border. In Virginia, opposition within the state Senate scuppered the governor's plan to build an arena for the basketball and hockey teams that play in Washington, D.C. D.C.'s municipal council stepped in with $515 million to refurbish their existing arena. In Chicago, a proposed lakefront stadium for the city's football team has run into political hurdles, but the project may well go ahead on a different site. Even if the economics of stadiums leave much to be desired, local governments clearly still see value in them. Partly that stems from financial engineering. It's easy enough to structure subsidies in ways which both obfuscate and defer their costs. In Chicago, for instance, the city faces steeply rising repayment costs on debt previously issued for a stadium renovation. By issuing bonds for a new stadium, the city would lower its annual repayments over the next decade. But the debt would then extend for many additional decades, a headache for future administrations. The root of the problem is fandom itself. Local politicians craving re-election don't want to be known for presiding over the exodus of their city's beloved team. This gives owners leverage. In Kansas City, a commonly heard view is that if the stadium tax vote had cut out the Royals and just been about the Chiefs, fresh from back-to-back Super Bowl victories, things would have turned out differently. It absolutely would have passed, says Ms. Blackman. Love of sports, like many passions, is not reducible to rational calculations.